Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today are the three co-authors of the just-published book, Rewriting Life Scripts, Transformational Recovery for Families of Addicts. So first off, we have Lillian Desjardins. Lillian is a certified clinical addiction specialist, renowned for her highly successful and innovative work with the Desjardins Unified Model of Treatment of Addictions. She is the co-founder of Pavilion Gilles Desjardins in Vale David, Quebec, Canada, and Pavilion International, a center for treatment of addictions in North Carolina. She has been involved in her own recovery process for 35 years. She's an international speaker, workshop leader, and is the president of HP Productions. Dr. Nancy Oakliff has more than 30 years in the field of education and has spent the last decade coaching people to be authentic leaders in every area of their lives. She is the author of Journey from Head to Heart, Living and Working Authentically, and Alphabet Meditation for Teachers, Everyday Wisdom for Educators, and has three audio coaching CDs furthering her work in this field. Irene Watson is the author of the award-winning book, The Sitting Swing, Finding Wisdom to Know the Difference. She is also the author, editor of The Story That Must Be Told, True Tales of Transformation, and Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers. She is the president of the Higher Power Foundation, facilitates women's retreats and workshops, and brings 40 years of life-changing experiences and a background in psychosynthesis to her programs and work. And the website for this collaboration and this new book, Rewriting Life Scripts, is higherpower.info. So I want to welcome all three of you wonderful ladies to the program today. Welcome.
Hi, Juanita.
Thank you.
Hi, Juanita.
Hi there. So I would actually like to start by just finding out how this collaboration came together. Irene, would you take that one?
I sure will. First of all, Nancy and I got together because of her talking to Bill Wigmore. He is the CEO of Austin Recovery, and he expressed the fact that there was really nothing available out there for information and books or anything for families that have addicts that go through a treatment program and then go home. And in many cases, families are just like, what do we do? You know, the person goes in, they had one particular behavior or some behaviors as an addict, and all of a sudden, 30 days later or whatever, they come back and they're different. And the families quite often don't know how to handle them or what to do. And so there's a lot of stuff, I call it stuff, that comes up. And so after talking to Bill, Nancy and I got together and we interviewed some of the counselors and started writing. And then we talked to Lillian. And Lillian, because of her experience and background in the addiction field, then came in with a lot of her information incorporated into the book. And so the three of us just got together and put our information together, and consequently, here we are with the book.
It really is unique. There are very few, if any, books out there right now that are really targeting the family.
Well, that's right. There really isn't. And we did some research into that. And not only that, Juanita, this particular book has really some cutting-edge, forerunning information in it. Nothing has been written on any of some of this information at all, so it's really new and it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to hear also a little bit from each of you as it pertains to your personal experience with addiction treatment and recovery. So maybe, Lillian, why don't we start with you, if you just want to talk about your personal experience.
I have been in recovery for my own addictions for the past 35 years. And I have worked in the field of addictions for the past 33 years now. It's been a passion of my life. Not only did we see addicts go through our program, but we have seen entire families because it truly is a family disease. And in my case, I had to face my addiction. My ex-husband died of addiction. I am now married to a recovering addict, and all our children are in recovery and, as a matter of fact, worked with us in the field of addiction. So I am very much aware of what the disease does to every single member of a family.
Was that apparent to you right from the beginning that it was a family disease?
No.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, my first 2 years in the recovery program, I used to say that the one good thing about my addictions is that they have not affected my family until I really sobered up and saw reality. Once I started working in the field, what happened is that way back in Canada, we were very privileged because we worked with some of the most, the largest Canadian breweries, Molson and Labatt. And they were very progressive. They started paying for treatment of family members because we started seeing that it is a problem. The addict goes home and all the problems continue or even escalate because the family members don't know how to deal with this person that has now changed. They cannot trust. The trust bond has been broken. They cannot communicate because they don't know how. There are no communication skills that go through the addiction and so on. So we were really privileged that the big companies started truly financing the treatment of family members so that it became like a laboratory. We really had the chance to expand the program, make it a closed model, and then include family members in the treatment with the addicts, which then absolutely promoted the understanding at a much deeper level, forgiveness at a much deeper level. And, you know, the addict saw how the child is experiencing addiction. The spouse saw how the addict is experiencing addiction. There was absolute shift in self-perception and in the understanding of the disease that then speeded up the process for both the addict and the family.
Uh-huh. It sounds like it was probably quite a revolutionary idea at the time.
It was. Uh-huh. It was. And it really progressed. I mean, Pavilion progressed from a dryout place to a rehab, from a rehab to a treatment center for alcoholics and drug addicts. And then, in no time, it became an inclusive closed model for the family and the addict. And later on, it evolved into what is known as the Desjardins Unified Model for Treatment of Addiction, where we included not simply substance abuse, but all the process addictions and the underlying reasons for it, the core addictions, so that for the past, I would say, 25 years, Pavilion Method was truly the treatment of addiction interaction disorder, which addictions are.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as an alcoholic. Every addict has other addictions that are attached to it.
It's so amazing, and I know that you do go into this in your book, just such a fascinating history. So let's talk a little with Nancy. Nancy, your personal experience?
Well, my experience is all personal. I'm not a professional in the field of addiction and recovery. I'm a practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with alcoholism, and for the first many decades of my life, believed, first of all, that it was a problem somebody else had. Secondly, I really grieved what I saw with the people that I loved, people who were intelligent, compassionate, they had good hearts, but under the influence of the addiction became monstrous. And so my experience has been just that. It's all experience. I had the great good fortune 14 years ago of marrying an alcoholic, and I have his permission to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the last 10 years, he and I together have been on the journey of recovery.
when I realized I was married to an alcoholic, there was a voice inside me that said, it's time for you to make peace with this. And so I went straight to Al-Anon and have engaged in many recovery activities myself, including going through the Pavilion program, which was the same 28-day program that my husband went through as an alcoholic. So the learning for me is that it truly is a family disease. There are deeply embedded patterns, scripts, if you will, that have to be rewritten by everybody.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that there was, once you went through recovery and treatment, that there was a real sense of understanding, or has that been a process in itself?
Well, it's still a process. You said went through as if I were finished.
Right.
I'm not. I think I'll be on it, on this journey for the rest of my life, because it's incremental and it's continually expanding. But yes, what a transformation there has been. I used to spend a lot of my time worrying and trying to help somebody else. And today I don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. You have your life back?
I have my life back.
Mm-hmm.
And I can truly and honestly say that at least 98% of the time, I'm deeply happy and at peace. And I don't think very many people can say that.
That's true. That's fantastic. Thank you, Nancy. And so, Irene, what about you?
My experience, again, is like Nancy's, experiential. And when I look back, there was alcoholism in my family, not my immediate family, but it's interesting because it was not labeled as alcoholism. What it was labeled is, oh, they're just drunk. And I kind of smile at that because what I know now, they were definitely alcoholics and were addicted. And, of course, as Lillian had mentioned earlier, you know, it's not only alcoholism. There was all the other addictions that came with that, too. But also, I am a mother of children that went through treatment. And so I consider myself as one of those family members that needed a book like this. Although I also, like Nancy, went through the Pavilion and did the 28 days, not for alcoholism, but my other addictions that, you know, like codependency and things like that, we all went in the same program. And even though I did go through that, it was still not easy being a mother to two children that also went through a program, because then there was all that, you know, the enabling and all the dysfunction and the fears and, oh no, like, what do we do now and how do we treat them? And so this is the other important thing with this book, is we cover those kinds of things and basically things that I went through, even though, as I say, I had some background in this. I still have to sort of start at the base and really work on myself.
Well, how is this book designed? Is it more of a workbook?
There are some workbook pages on it, but there's just a lot of explanation of what really goes on and the responsibilities that the spouse or the parent or the sibling, the families really take, because basically what we're focusing on is not the addict. The addict already went through treatment. The addict has the program. The addict will be the addict, and they will behave and act and react as they do, whatever happens. But what this book is for the family, how they are to behave and to act and understand, just basically get some core information as to what is really going on, but really focus on themselves and make themselves that better person and the transforming so that they can then support the addict. And so we do have a lot of explanation. We have some personal stories, but we also have some workbook pages.
May I add just a little to that?
You bet, Nancy.
I was looking at the book this morning and realizing that the backbone of this book actually is questions that families really ask when their loved one goes into treatment or when they become fully aware that there is an addiction and it has to be treated. So we were supplied by Austin Recovery with a set of questions that their clients typically ask. So those questions are really the backbone of the book. And then overlaid on top of that, there's a beautiful explanation in the beginning of the book of how the disease progresses. It says the alcoholic is doing this and the family is doing this. It's the first time I've seen the side-by-side comparison. And then as the book progresses, there are many tools, there are many stories interspersed throughout the book, success stories, stories from family members who truly have experienced the joy of recovery. And then at the very end of the book, there is very specific information for how you do rewrite the script. So this book has many facets to it. It's just a wonderful design.
Yeah, it really is a wonderful, fantastic design. So, Lillian, let's talk with you once again. You have extensive background dealing with family members, and I'd like to get your opinion on what exactly family recovery looks like and the intended outcome in treatment for family members of an addict.
First of all, we need to look, for instance, at regarding the families, which family members do need treatment and which can be simply helped by joining a 12-step group like Al-Anon or CODA. Because for many, Al-Anon and CODA will give the answers and will give the support and the understanding that a family member needs. But there is also a specific population of family members who will need more. For instance, the person whose parent was an addict, and that person is now married to an addict, they have a double set of problems. They have unresolved issues as a child of an alcoholic, and that will stand in the way of clearly understanding and their ability to communicate and deal with the addict. And the addict will constantly re-trigger their past unresolved hurts.
So it really is a deep emotional journey that the whole family has to go through.
Absolutely. The other, for instance, person that needs treatment as family members will be the person that has unresolved issues with their addict spouse, but has that previous childhood issue, okay? They will never be able to get through to a normal level of communication. They will not be able to develop the clear boundaries or develop skills that are necessary until the past hurts are out of the way. We have seen addicts who came into treatment with unresolved child family of origin issues, where the addict has had parents that were addicts. That addict has a hard time dealing with his own or her own addiction until the family of origin issues are resolved. When that addict is married to a spouse who has family of origin issues, there is no way that they can have a marriage until that is resolved, because they are constantly toxic for each other, re-triggering each other's childhood hurt.
And that's very unconscious.
That's very unconscious. This is like having a skeleton in the closet. You don't know that that's what's going on, but that is the underlying reality. Which other members, family members would need treatment? A spouse who has substance and process addiction. For instance, an alcoholic and a sex, who is also a sex addict. You have two major addictions going at the same time, one triggering the other. The spouse and the family members never know. It is crazy making, because we really know the difference in an addict when they drink. They smell of alcohol, they slur their speech. You can easily identify the problem. This is their behavior because of alcohol. When that behavior keeps on going on after treatment, and if in treatment the sex addiction was not addressed, Many treatments are strictly for substance abuse. So what gets addressed is substance abuse. And a process addiction goes unidentified. And then the family is really dealing with this other issue that will make the same crazy merry-go-round of lies, of minimizing, of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So these spouses need treatment because they are dealing with a much bigger reality than just a substance addiction. Same thing, an alcoholic who is also a gambler. You have a very potent addiction that affects the entire family. And, you know, we think always that it's the husband who's the gambler. I cannot tell you how many cases we had of women addicted to eBay.
Interesting.
And buying and buying and buying.
Is that like a shopping addiction as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But these are the cases of family members that do need more than just, you know, the Al-Anon or Coda.
Mm-hmm.
They will still need Al-Anon and Coda as an ongoing help for them, but they will need also to address as treatment some of the issues, or someone who lives with an alcoholic or an addict that is physically abusive, because the rage and the physical violence cause hurt and break the trust bond at a much deeper level. And what happens to these spouses is usually that they internalize their anger and their grief, and it is internalized as self-affliction. They are rejecting themselves from there on, and usually they then start exhibiting cancer or, you know, other illnesses.
Oh, right, right.
And if those are not addressed properly, biopsychosocial disease.
Mm-hmm.
And the biopsychosocial applies to the family members too.
You know, we're seeing so much right now in mainstream media, just basically out there in the world. Addiction is really in your face. There is a lot of TV programs. It is in real life over the TV. Why do you think that this is coming kind of to a head? It's becoming so public at this point.
I truly believe that our society right now runs on four core addictions. The security addiction, the not enough syndrome. It's prevalent in everything, in our economy and our governments. As a society, we believe that there is not enough time, not enough stuff. We got to acquire more, not enough opportunities, not enough love, and so on. Power control is the next one. The more you think that you don't have enough, the more you crave power and control.
Mm.
And when these two addictions fight within you, you will need the sensation addiction to kill the pain. So medicators come in. And we have created brand new medicators. Right now, you know, alcoholism is a big addiction, yes. 17.6 million adults in USA are alcoholics.
That's a huge percentage.
The worst part is that people aged 12 to 20 drink 11% of all yearly alcohol.
Wow.
And 90% of this is consumed as binge drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest addiction right now that we have is cyber sex.
Mm-hmm.
And pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Sex addiction, I mean, it's in our faces everywhere. It's in our magazines everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have created a society that craves instant solutions, the magical pill,
mm-hmm.
and medicators are the way that we deal with the stresses that we have created.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really believe that it is so prevalent in our society. Shopping addiction, you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But the internet addiction, there are countries now in the world that are dealing, South Korea and China are starting to massively have to deal with the young population addicted to video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
and the internet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the more the children are allowed access to internet, the less conversation there will be between family members.
These
are new addictions.
They are. Well, changing times. It's very fast-paced right now. Irene, I'd like to bring you in on this as well. Do you feel that in this world of, that we're living in where it really is instant gratification, do you think that family members are typically open to the recovery process, which really is a lifelong process? There is no instant gratification there, and really they have to dig deep within themselves.
Oh, I so agree with that, definitely. And it's not easy, that is for sure, because there's a lot of confusion. And, you know, a lot of times we have imprints that are passed down for generations, and many times it causes a lot of codependency. We maybe, one of the imprints that passed down is the need to fix. And so as, let's say, a parent or a family member, they in turn then want to fix that person because that's been passed down for so long. And that's really hard to break. And that's why, you know, they need to transform themselves. But the decision has to be made within that person themselves that, yes, that they really do want to change. They want to find new ways. They want to be able to support rather than fix. And as I say, it's not easy, but the person has to be determined and has to want to.
I wonder how a recovering addict would deal with a family member that didn't want to get on board with their own recovery. Is that a difficult situation?
Very. It is a very difficult situation. We have seen divorces. We have seen separations. We have seen a lot of pain where the addict does not get the support of the family members. We have also seen where then the addict closes more or less himself in the recovery groups and recreates, another family within the recovery community that understands the addict, that supports the addict, and it just creates more of a breakage of communication and closeness. But, you know, the good thing in the world of addiction is that they are all based on pain. And pain is an incredible trigger for people to want to do things differently. I have seen family members who were very, very angry, yet their main desire was a healing, and they were in pain. They didn't know how. The reason for this book is because I believe that Nancy and Irene and me have walked all sides of this, you know, and we know that if you appeal to people and if you give people a chance to see and understand that the addiction is only one type, but behind the ad, every single member of the family stays there because they had a glimpse of the true identity of that addict. At times, they have experienced the truth about that addict, that the disease prevents from the daily experience. And when you give the addict the chance to shift their self-perception, to shift from the identification with their addiction, to this higher vision of who they are, and you give the family members the same chance, suddenly everybody has a different set of eyes. Because all of us on this planet, what do we want? We want to be loved. We want to love.
And we'll be back. More Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. And joining me today are the three co-authors of the just-published book, Rewriting Life Scripts, Transformational Recovery for Families of Addicts. There's so much shame and hurt that is tied in, and it sounds like when you really embrace that higher vision, all of that gets erased.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Nancy, we haven't heard from you. What are your thoughts?
I'm sitting here thinking that we're talking about all this within the context of the family, and certainly that's what the book is about. But in my work as a leadership coach who is often called into organizations because there's some difficulty with an employee, I find in a large percentage of those instances, the first words out of the person's mouth when I sit to talk with them are, my mom was an alcoholic, or my dad was an alcoholic.
Yep.
So what's happening in the workplace is that everybody around this person is struggling with those old patterns that are being played out, completely oblivious and unaware of their source or how to deal with them.
I've heard that the workplace becomes the family dynamic.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those numbers that Lillian gave earlier, and I'm not sure what the numbers for children of alcoholics are. At one time, it was 1 out of every 9 people have been profoundly affected by another person's addiction, which means they have some form of addiction as well. Well, that's a lot of people, 1 out of 9.
Almost everybody.
That's a lot of people. So in the workplace, in schools, in friendship circle, in churches, mm-hmm. any place where groups of people gather, these old scripts float to the surface. And people are unaware of what they are, so they don't address them. Most people are very reluctant to confront another person. They don't know how to do it without getting emotional and going to a place where nobody wants to go. And so people for years on end just struggle. And sometimes experience physical illness, of ramifications that are extremely expensive for organizations. So, I wish everybody would read this book. There's a section on communication. If people read nothing but that section, they would have a deeper understanding of how to communicate in a way that they speak the truth in love, without judgment, and put people in a place of transformation so that those dynamics can shift.
Do you find that you, in your coaching practice, have to address this issue head on? Do you make that known, the emotional baggage that people may be carrying with them?
I do.
You do?
Mm-hmm. I do, as early on as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
do you find that they're open to it?
Some people are.
Okay.
And some
people aren't.
And if they aren't, then I... You know, sometimes I tell them head on, I don't think I can help you. You need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that 2 or 3 times throughout the 10 years that I've been engaged in coaching. But most of the time, I prefer to take a different angle, use different language to describe the same dynamic. And sometimes I can bring them around in a gentler way so that they become willing.
Mm-hmm.
Through the coaching process to take a look at that.
Hmm.
But, you know, bottom line, it's up to the person, and some people just say no.
Right, right. And maybe pick it up at another point in their life. You plant the seed.
You never know.
Yeah.
I planted the seed. That's my job.
That's fantastic. And so, Irene, what is meant by saying rewriting life scripts? What does that mean?
Oh, yes, rewriting life script. I just mentioned a few minutes ago that we have imprints that are passed down for generations, and, you know, our thoughts and behaviors and actions and reactions quite often are determined by what we learned from the family that we're in or the community, or, you know, it kind of bubbles out. And so those are set in our mind, and that's how we live our lives. Well, that's not always the best way, and it's not always the most effective way, especially when dealing with somebody that's in your family that's an addict and has gone through the recovery center or a treatment center, or, you know, is making the changes. So what rewriting life scripts is looking at what our old behaviors are, what our old thoughts are, actions, reactions, and looking at them, looking at what doesn't work, what isn't really conducive to the situation, and making a decision to change that. And from that point, start working on doing it differently.
What does that look like on a real practical level in someone's life?
First of all, the family, through this book, will understand that it is not just about them, meaning the addict, but that there is a link. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting different results. So the family member has justified resentment because the addict keeps on doing really things that are unacceptable, because the person, the family member, keeps on responding to those unacceptable things the same way over and over, because they don't know how to respond in a different way, they participate in the insanity. Justified resentments are like the cup of poison that I am drinking, but I expect you to die from. It's not going to happen. We give in this book practical ways of how to stop patterns by explaining this is the progression of the disease that the addict has. This is the progression of your responses that are ineffective. How many times the family member preaches, complains, whines, angrily expresses, or shuts down in the silence? It does not change anything. Family members need tools. They need new skills. They need to understand that what they have been doing so far is not producing the result that they need.
Mm-hmm. That's great motivation.
In practical terms, through the book, gives tools. It explains what boundaries are, and it teaches how to set one. It, like Nancy said, it talks about communication, but it doesn't give you just a lecture on communication. It gives you practical tools on how to apply it.
Juanita, if I may add
something
to that, you asked what is the practical aspect, and my one-word answer to that is hope. With the tangible tools that make hope come alive. And one of the stories in this book is about an alcoholic whose stepmother was surrounded in the family by alcoholics, and she was the only one in recovery. She was not an alcoholic or an addict, but she was going to Al-Anon, she was going to counseling, and her story says, once in a visit with her counselor, my stepmom said, "Why am I doing this? No one's getting sober." The counselor wisely responded, "Because someday, somebody will get sober, and you want to be ready for them."
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
And then she goes on in the story and says, "I was that person, and my stepmom was ready, and I'll always be grateful to her for that." So my one-word answer is hope, and my two-word answer is tangible hope, not just ephemeral, "Oh, I hope someday that," but taking the tangible next steps to make hope come alive. And the stories in this book are the practical aspect of it. People have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives hope.
And do you think just taking, basically getting on board with kind of this program that you've laid out in this book, that each step along the way, that people will be feeling better, and that will be motivation enough to continue and go deeper and farther and continue on the journey?
Absolutely. But it's not just they feel better. It's that they start seeing change,
mm-hmm.
not only in themselves, but also in the people around them. Life gets easier.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, we hear in this whole sort of arena of recovery that it's a healing process. What are we really healing? Any of you can take that one.
Well, we are healing the pain. We are healing the shame. We are healing the separateness. The whole concept of not being at one with our Creator, not being at one within a family, but this feeling that we are isolated little islands. We are healing imprints that hamper the entire life. If my imprint is that I'm not good enough, that will have by far more ramifications than me just reaching out for a drink. That will continue even if I stop drinking. But if I keep on with this deep imprint that I am not enough, that no matter how much I do, it's not enough, it is going to make out of me someone who is never satisfied, someone who can never enjoy the now moment. What we are healing with addicts and their families is that addiction makes you live in the past or in the future, but never in being in the now, because it's either the past hurts, the past shame, the past guilt, the past whatever pain, and then it gets projected with fear and anxiety onto the future.
Huh?
And one of the great healing things that happens in recovery is that people make peace with their past. The hope that Nancy talks about is for the future. And in the now, they have finally a way of living and accepting and understanding what is going on now, and then connecting with something higher, connecting within the family, but mostly for each person to connect with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to add to that, too, is, you know, there's just so much pain in this world, in our society, and the dysfunction that goes on. And so as each person can heal themselves within, this is sort of has a chain effect, because if the person has healed themselves and is working in the recovery program, they have changed. But they also then can help others change and actually act as a role model.
It's a ripple effect.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ripple effect. And so pretty soon, you know, our friends are then being in the healing, you know, are healing themselves. And this goes on in the families. And it ends up being global. It's a slow effect, but it's definitely there as a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need some healing on this planet.
One person at a time.
Yep. You take a lot in this book. You bring a lot of the 12-step model for rewriting life scripts. And I know each of you all have intensive experience with the 12-step programs, both personally and professionally. So have you tweaked it at all? What do you feel is so profound about this program that it's actually making the pages of your book? And any of you can respond, or all of you can respond to this one, since you each have personal experience.
First of all, the 12 steps are the most effective mental, emotional, and spiritual hygiene programs.
Mm.
They cleanse you.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the 12 steps take a failure and through the process of the steps turn out a success. They are based on five principles. The principles that are filtered through the steps are honesty, humility, hope, purity of intent, second law. And you know, whoever on this planet applies these five principles is going to have a rich life that does not require medicators, that does not require addiction. I believe that one of the big gifts to the 20th century has been the 12 steps, because as an offset of the 12 steps, the adult children of alcoholics have started getting help, the spouses have started getting help, the family is getting help, other addictions are getting help. So the 12 steps are a gem.
It's just not AA anymore.
Misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at one time it was just AA. Now it's expanded out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also believe that the 12 steps allow you to take responsibility for your own self.
Mm-hmm.
And make that decision of making the change. Nobody else can do it for you. Once you go through the steps and go for each one of them, it's taking that responsibility for oneself.
Also, the essence of the 12 steps is let go and let God. There's a lot of relief in moving out of depending on our own ability to think our way out of a situation or take care of everything ourselves and learn to depend on a higher power.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, Nancy, that people are open to the spiritual aspect of the 12-step model? And most models of recovery, actually, I think, have a spiritual component to them.
I think they're very open to them. Sometimes they have to unlearn a lot of things they've learned in religion that keep them from letting go, if that makes any sense. Sometimes there are just old scripts that religion has taught us that we do have to set aside and learn to completely let go and have true faith in a power that's greater than we are.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Sorry, go ahead, Lillian.
We have had through the years that in treatment, Muslims, Catholics, Baptists, Hindus, atheists, I mean, name it. One thing that amazingly came out for all these people, no matter how much they struggled with in which envelope they're going to put a higher power or a God or a Buddha or Jesus or whoever, when the titles were stripped off, for all of them, it inevitably ended being love.
Mm-hmm.
It always ended up being love, and everybody could accept love as something much higher than themselves.
I so agree with that. It reflects back to the time when I went through the treatment program, and there were, I believe, 32 of us. And on the first or second day, we were asked to define the word God. And it was interesting because every one of us in that room had a different word, a different label.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we can shift our mind to, like what Lillian says, the bottom line is love.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 12 steps are workable for anybody.
For everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So
this is the power of the 12-step groups. Everybody is accepted. I mean, I have sat in rooms where the person absolutely was not going to have anything to do with a God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were accepted and loved long enough to start loving themselves. And once they love themselves, they do believe in love.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the base of everybody's belief.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating transformation. Yeah, love at the bottom. Well, your organization is called Higher Power Foundation, and so clearly we have a spiritual connotation there. But maybe Irene, tell us a little more about the Higher Power Foundation and how, from what I understand, you're making your book and your works accessible to treatment centers.
Yes, that's right. Higher Power Foundation is a nonprofit organization, and the three of us have donated our time and efforts with this book. We're not taking any compensation whatsoever or royalties from this. Every bit of money that is made on it goes directly to the Higher Power Foundation. The Higher Power Foundation is going to be, yes, like you say, supplying some treatment centers with the book. But also what we do is we give grants to people that want to go through some type of a program. The website is higherpowerfoundation.com, where there's a lot of information. The book is also available there. We certainly, if people will order the book through there, we will autograph it for them. The money directly, again, goes to foundation. In the back of the book, we have a page of different ways that people can actually participate, and that is, you know, buying books or donating funds so that people can get the book that maybe can't afford it or possibly go, you know, taken to a center, or for families that can be given out to families. So there's ways that people can participate. The information is back in the book, but it's also on the website higherpowerfoundation.com. But the three of us also have a website, Juanita, and it's called rewritinglifescripts.com, the same title of the book. And the same information can be found there, and more information about the three of us also.
So that's the book's website, rewritinglifescripts.com.
That's right.
Okay.
The information is there, but it's also on higherpowerfoundation.com.
Okay, great. Well, wonderful. Well, this hour has just zipped by so quickly, ladies. I want to make sure I get some final thoughts from each one of you. So as we close, Nancy, maybe you would like to start, just whatever you would like to share with our audience, our listeners today. And I just want to thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I just want to echo what my colleagues have said about the power of love. One way to look at this book is that it is an operational guide for love, and at the very end of the book, there is a love story, and so I celebrate that and send this book out in hopes that it will bring more love, more truth, and more light to many people.
Thank you so much. Irene?
I'm going to use two words to finalize, and I'm going to say recovery rock.
For me, this book was a work of love, of harmony, of three types. When we came together, we didn't have an idea of what is going to emerge. And all three of us that went through the process of surrender, of trust and belief, and allowed the creativity to flow through our hearts. The three of us last night were talking, and one thing that we have as a hope for this book and for everybody that touches it in any shape or form, is that it'd be a blessing in their life.
Thank you so much, Lillian. And ladies,
I'd like to just add something to that. This is the gift to the universe. And whoever receives this book is going to be transformed.
Thank you so much, ladies. This has been a great hour, a really transformative hour for our listeners. So I appreciate you coming on to the program today. I hope to have you back at some point. You know, I just did get this book in my hands last night. I think it just came out of the boxes from the publisher yesterday. So I really look forward to diving deeper into it, and I can tell already from just what I've read, the potential for transformation in those pages is incredible. So thank you for your work. Thank you for your time today, and all the best to all three of you.
Thank you, Juanita. The best to you.
Thank you so much. All right, listeners, that has been Lillian Desjardins, Nancy Oakless, and Irene Watson, co-authors of the new book, Rewriting Life Script, Transformational Recovery for Families of Addicts, and it's out on Loving Healing Press. Just hit shelves, so please do check for it at online booksellers, and also check your local bookstore. Support your local business and have them order it for you. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in to this great interview today. I hope you have enjoyed it. This has been Juanita Watson on Inside Scoop Live. Until next time.